Welcome to the show. I'm Jason Whitlock, and I'll tell you what the latest twist in the National Anthem saga means for the NFL.
And I'm Colin Cowherd. I'm going to tell you why anybody who thinks England has been lucky in this World Cup is out of their collective mind. Speak for yourself starts now, baby. I'm 61% British. Come on, England!
They have been lucky. All right, hello and welcome. We're joined today by Fox soccer analyst Ian Joy. Let's start at the World Cup, where France won the first semifinal match today, topping Belgium 1-0. Belgium had been one of the more potent offensive teams in the tournament, but were held scoreless today. Ian, how was France able to shut out this explosive offensive team?
Well, you mentioned it. It was a collective team performance from France. They got an excellent goal. We had to wait patiently for that goal that potentially changed the game and made it more interesting. The game needed a goal, and it got it at the right time. But I was surprised with the way that France performed. I mean, defensively, they were very solid. They limited Belgium's opportunities. Together, you can see that midfield of Pogba dropping back Kanté, who has been excellent so far in this tournament, dropping back in support of their backline and making it so difficult for Belgium to even create opportunities.
You know, soccer from FIFA on down is kind of political at times. And France has always reminded me of Argentina, where their talent is indisputable, but they can be dysfunctional at the top.
Absolutely.
This team doesn't feel like that. Why?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible, really, to watch the turnaround from France. Over the last few World Cups, there's always been that political problem inside the camp where they haven't necessarily been together. There's been one or two problematic players in there who have caused problems. Now, all of a sudden, you've got these young players, the young Instagram models, I like to call them, because they love themselves, but they love themselves as a team. This is a team spirit that's got them to the final. I still think there's more to come from this France side. Individually, they are very good. They are world class. So there's more to come as a team, and there's more to come as individuals. I wouldn't want to meet them in the final.
It sounds like you believe they're the favorite and that England, Croatia really don't have a chance.
Jason, where have you been? I've been saying that France are going to win this from the very beginning. I said it all the way from the start that if they get their act together, they're going to be pretty much unstoppable, and so far it's proved to be the case.
Now let's go to England, who takes on Croatia tomorrow in what will be a stupendous match. It is the first World Cup semifinal for England in 28 years. Their leading scorer in the tournament is Harry Kane, and they've really come together. Their rallying cry, it's coming home, first soccer match ever in London years ago. Even still, some have tried to claim their path to the Final Four has not been as tough.
Sure.
Okay, they rolled through Tunisia and Panama. It should be noted, Panama gave the USA, in qualifying, real troubles. lost to the best team they played, Belgium, drawing Sweden in the quarters, and defending champ Germany was eliminated. Ian, some are arguing it's been lucky. Is it impressive luck? What is it for you?
You could say it's luck getting the route that they've had all the way through to the semifinal stage, but for me, it's been, again, that team spirit. A lot of credit goes to their head coach, Gareth Southgate, the way he's brought this team together, the way he's actually brought the nation together, because more often than not, heading into a big tournament, England have really they've struggled with the media pressure, and the players have had big issues with that. It's not the case this time around. The whole media is behind this team. The whole nation is behind this team. And you can tell that there is a team spirit within that camp. And even though they don't necessarily have the team of individuals that France have or even a Belgium have had in this tournament, they are collectively one of the most difficult teams to beat. And I think they're more rested. When you look at the path that Croatia have taken all the way to get to the semi-final, they've played an extra 30 minutes, plus the penalty kick shootout two times in a row. That takes its toll on your body. So England are my favourites in this match.
Harry Kane was not a factor in England's last win, which I see as a real positive. How reliant are they on him? He's the leading scorer in the Cup.
I think they rely on him because he is that goal scorer. I know you're a big fan of his, and I am too. I think if you create the opportunities for a player like Harry Kane, who can potentially go on to be a world superstar, he's got to prove it at this level, right? You're in a semi-final of a World Cup. You need your best players to step up when it matters most. Harry Kane is that guy. He's cool, calm, and composed. You forget how young this guy is, 24 years old. I mean, it's incredible to watch this guy play the game, scored so many goals already. He might finish up with that golden boot.
Colin said something interesting at the beginning of this about how political soccer is. And then you just said something about the unity around this England team, where some are saying they're a little surprised because of Brexit, because of some of the political things going on in the EU. How were they able to get this unity from the media, from the fans, and all this support? Explain that a little more to me.
Well, it comes down to the head coach. As I mentioned a moment ago, Gareth Southgate took over when England were going through a problematic time. They brought in Sam Allardyce. He had some issues with the media. They called him out on some gambling issues and some problems behind the scenes, and he therefore lost his job. So Gareth Southgate, he was a very successful youth coach with the England national team. He knows a lot of these kids, all the way from the under 17, 19, 20s through into the full team. And he is the guy's in charge of them now. England, Len, they leaned on him. They gave him that opportunity because they recognised that this guy knows these players better than anybody else before. And he's a guy who's composed in the media. The way he handles the questions that more other coaches, more often than not, they struggle to deal with. And therefore, it becomes a bigger problem, a bigger picture, a bigger headline in the newspapers and the media. He's calmed it all down.
Remember, England's a tabloid-driven
Absolutely.
Press. So it was TMZ before our TMZ. And this team has a lot of young players, so you don't have these saucy backgrounds. There's not a lot of stars. Kane's their star, and he's a baby. You know, it almost feels like to me, England's got a little Boston Red Sox in them. They've always had talent.
Yep.
But when they got into a big spot with the Yankees for years, they just shrunk. England has been shrinking in the World Cup seemingly forever.
Yeah.
This team, you know, you use this often. They're too young to know the pressure. Mm-hmm. England doesn't know at the stage. They're not home now.
I agree.
They're not
with that.
Reading the tabloids. They're not in the pubs. They don't sense how big this is.
Dare I say it, this team of individuals is rather boring as well. There is no story behind these
there
players.
There isn't.
They are absolutely players who are top professionals. They focus on their game. They're not dancing in nightclubs, creating stories for the media to jump on. They are focusing on their goal at hand, and that is domestically for their club teams. Every one of them have an impeccable record. And now into the national team, they've got a team spirit that it's us. Now it's a nation. And now all of a sudden, they've got a big chance of winning it.
All right, I'm not sure if any story could top the World Cup, but Ronaldo has tried. Let's move to Spain, where Real Madrid announced today that Cristiano Ronaldo has been transferred to Italy's most dominant team, Juventus. For the last 9 years, Ronaldo's been the biggest player in the world on the biggest team in the world. Ian.
Yeah.
Is he going to regret leaving Real Madrid for a great team, but it's not Real Madrid?
It's an interesting one, Jason. I really believe that this is a surprise move for the world of soccer. At this stage in his career, he's getting older. I think he's, 33 years old now. He has had so much success in the 9 years he's had at Real Madrid, but he surprised everybody 9 years ago when he left Manchester
United. That's right. That's right.
To go to Real Madrid. It was a dream of his.
By the way, played for Man U, went to Real Madrid, now at 33 Juventus. LeBron, this is LeBron. Like LeBron, he's no longer quite in his peak. Aren't people saying why?
The Lakers are the biggest franchise maybe in sports.
Yes, but they play alongside the Warriors, who have clearly better personnel. I do think there's a LeBron comp here. Neither is in their prime, but they're almost physical except. You played against them at 18. Ronaldo's a physical exception.
Yes, absolutely. And me and Jason have already had this discussion about the greatest athlete of all time. And this is a great athlete. And I know we may continue that discussion going forward, but he is still in great condition. And because of the way he's looked after his body, because of the way he's performed and how successful he has been, he's managed to drop back a little bit and save some energy for that next step. I'm surprised he went to Italy. I'm surprised he's gone to Juventus, but Italian fans, Serie A fans are singing in delight with the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo is going there. And let's not forget, in the Champions League, he scored a breathtaking goal, if you remember, that bicycle kick.
Yes, yes.
Real Madrid, and I think they destroyed him 3-0 at Juventus Stadium. And every single Juventus fan inside that stadium stood up and applauded that goal. This is the away team, an away player. They stood up and applauded. And now all of a sudden, he's going to Juventus. I wonder if that had anything to do with it.
Ian, this decision seems completely financial driven, though. Right? If it wasn't for the money, he would stay in Real Madrid, no?
I disagree, because I think outside of Real Madrid, he could have gone to maybe Asia. He could have gone to Major League Soccer, where there would be a bigger golden ticket waiting for him, a bigger financial bonus waiting for him. And I think now, if you look at him and the way he's gone to Juventus, he looks like he wants to finish at the very top. He's gone to a club that is still one of the best in Europe, and they've got a target of winning the Champions League. So he's not taking a step back and just going for money. I see this as a bigger challenge for him.
Does Juventus have the kind of young players he needs?
They do. They have a very good squad of players.
Just like the Lakers.
Yes.
No!
So what you're saying
is... Rondo over there.
He's the best athlete around? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying 33-year-old guys moving to another team. The media thinks it's a money grab, but LeBron sees the young Lakers.
Challenge.
Ronaldo sees the challenge in the young Juventus squad, and he's like, I can take them to another level.
Exactly. Good luck.
Hi, I'm Alexi Lalas. I used to play soccer back in the 1900s for the U.S. Now you can find me talking about soccer this summer during the World Cup on Fox. Now through July 15th, you can get daily FIFA World Cup updates from me through your Alexa-enabled device. Just say, Alexa, play the Fox Sports Flash Briefing, and you'll get the latest tournament news straight from Russia. Alexa and Alexi, now that's a winning team. Don't forget to watch the 2018 FIFA World Cup all tournament long live on Fox and FS1.
Welcome back, joined now by longtime NFL coach Rob Ryan, former Pro Bowler Mark Carrier with the Bears. Let's move to the National Football League, where the controversy over the anthem appears to be rolling on. The league tried to address the issue earlier this year, changing their policy to require players to stand during the anthem or stay in the locker room. But now the NFLPA has filed a grievance over the new policy and announced that we'll be opening discussions with the league about how to resolve their differences. Whitlock, is it a mistake for the NFL, the league, NFLPA to revisit the anthem policy?
Yeah, I think it's a big mistake, and I think they need to be trying to move on from this. I saw the NFLPA statement. They're having confidential meetings with the owners. Why are you announcing a confidential meeting? I thought it was confidential. they won't leave this issue alone. And it speaks to the weakness of the union. Is if this is the battle that they can win over the national anthem, because they can't win battles over major issues, how they're going to treat former players and retired players, health benefits, things like that. Let's argue about the national anthem, continue to dirty up the brand of NFL football players and irritate your customer base. Let's continue that fight because it's in the media rather than go after substantive issues. Look, a lot of the players chirping about they want guaranteed contracts. Have that fight. But instead, let's fight over the national anthem. I think it's a mistake on both sides.
It's amazing to me. The NFL owners and players have a 53-47 split. Players can make up to 48.5%. They're partners, okay? But there are a lot of marriages that aren't 53-47 split, okay? So it's a 53-47 split up to a 52-48 split. That's almost like our elections in America. That's a divided country. That is a united business. Why are you revisiting your biggest toenail, your biggest headache last year, your biggest pain in the butt last year? This was the one thing that both sides, even players now, have acknowledged. All right, we want to do some things in the community, but we're done with the anthem. Why are you revisiting this? Yeah. I don't get it. I don't understand it.
I hate it. I mean, like, look, the Colin Kaepernick thing, and look, Malcolm Jenkins and Anquan Boldin, two man of the year in the NFL, they did a fantastic job of bringing in the owners, seeing this, bringing up $200 million or so for social awareness.
$100 million.
But it's still an amazing thing to see that going. That's not happening in any other league. The thing is, when Kaepernick talked to one guy, a Green Beret, Nate Boyer, got his opinion. Look, the last 3 weeks I've worked on the docks with YYK and Bay City Marine, and I've been side by side with the Navy's finest and our armed services finest every day. And every single day, to a man or woman, they hate the national anthem thing. They love the National Football League, but it is causing problems, and it's not right. It's a black eye for our league. We need to address these problems, but not during the national anthem. You're disrespecting our country. Look, all this soccer going on and all this, everybody standing with pride for their country. Guys, avoid this thing. It's not the right fight. And there's no bigger player coaches than the Ryans, as you know.
Yep.
Myself, my brother, my dad, we've all been fired for being players coaches. But I'll promise you, we'll stand up to the players here and say, you're wrong here, and you have to believe that.
The NFL screwed this up. There's no question. They decided on this in March. In March, they came up with this philosophy in their meetings. And they had meetings again in June. And instead of trying to, hey, let's get this PR, let's stop this, get the play. Hey, we're going to do this, but let's get the players in. Let's have these secret meetings that everybody knows about and get to them and say, hey, how can we fix this? How can we get you guys on board? What do we need to do? Or talk about what they've done with the $100 million to say, hey, this is what we're doing to try to better our cause, so we're all in this together. Instead, they do it, they don't do it. And then the union, which is not strong, it's not come out now. And now here's, like we talked about, and Rob knows this, coaches hate media information during this time of the year because it's never good for players, because all the NFL organizations shut down now until mid-July. And only information that comes out at this time is always bad. Always bad, and they have to deal with it.
Well, the NFLPA, people have argued that the baseball umpires have a stronger union than the NFL players. And when you read this story, you're like, to your point, it's like, why is it out? Why can't you have a meeting? Why is this public? Why is this now on talk shows? I mean, it's, and by the way, I avoid it as a topic generally, but a lot of shows don't. They want to talk about it for hours.
Listen, I would love for DeMora Smith and the PA to poll the 1,700 NFL players and ask them, how important is this national anthem issue to you? How important of the 1,700 NFL players, how many of you really want to take a knee or protest during the national anthem? I would love for that poll to be taken, because if you can find me more than 100 players that will say, hey, this is important and I can't wait to take a knee, I would be shocked if it's more than 100. And so if the overwhelming majority of your players want something else, hey, let's concentrate on how much more money we can make. That way I can take that money and I can go support these issues that I allegedly believe in. That's the best thing you can do. This thing during the national anthem doesn't help anybody but people's Twitter feed.
Because it's not about the national anthem. It's about the players saying, hey, you're not telling us what to do. This is what we want to do. It's not about the anthem, even more so now, because now the players are reacting, and NFLPA is reacting, because the owners did something without concurring with them. And they're mad about it, so they're going to act out.
It's how divorces happen, literally. You start out about one thing, and then it spirals into a bunch of Mickey Mouse things that really aren't that important, but you've drawn a line in the sand, and the next thing you know, you ended up in divorce court, and you don't even know why.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the union's trying to justify, you know, hey, why we're here.
Yeah.
Well, this is a non-fight. Don't get into it now. Like you say, Jason, bring up the guaranteed contracts. There's a fight worth having. Yeah. There's a fight worth winning.
Argue about something. Listen, 1,700 players, 70% of them are black. Argue about how many black coaches there are.
No question.
Do that.
No question.
But instead, we're arguing about whether we can make a scene during the national anthem so our Twitter feeds can rise and we can tell everybody we care about police brutality. It's a joke. All right, welcome back. Rob Ryan and Mark Carey are back. Let's move to New England, where the Patriots have had a tumultuous offseason, and it's not over yet, with an anonymous AFC executive saying he thinks that Rob Gronkowski could still be on the trading block. Gronk's been great when he's on the field, but he's injured a lot, and Bill Belichick has a history of dumping stars before their expiration date. Cowherd, would it be smart to move on from Gronkowski?
No, it'd be a disaster for two reasons. Who's the Patriots' biggest rival in the AFC? Steelers. Six games, he's got 8 TDs against them, 690 yards. Pittsburgh can't stop him. Pittsburgh has never been able to stop Gronk. They've stopped sometimes New England's running game. They can't stop Gronk. And that's your biggest rival. That's your impediment to the Super Bowl. The second thing is, this is no longer Belichick's team. Kraft and Brady have an alignment socially. This is Tom's team. You got 2 years left of Tom. Keep him happy. This isn't a bottom-feeding player. This isn't a headache player. This is a highly productive player who, now that Edelman's hurt, or PEDs, now that Amendola's gone, Brandon Cooks is gone, he's got one guy on that roster. By the way, their draft is all young offensive guys. He's got one buddy on that team. His buddy is Gronk. He's 40. It is now his franchise. Don't mess with Tom. Tom's been a good soldier. Tom's won your rings. Tom loves Gronk. Don't mess with Gronk.
You know what the most important ability is?
What?
Availability. And Gronk's got an availability problem. He's not going to get more healthy the older he gets. This guy, I don't think, has played 16 games since 2011. It's not going to happen. And so it's been in Belichick's DNA,
as there are diminishing returns and a guy moves into that part of his career where his most important ability, availability, comes into question, you move on from him. And so I don't think it would be the worst thing. And look, I'm on Tom Brady's side in his feud with Bill Belichick. But I wouldn't cater all my decisions to making Tom Brady happy. You know, it's hard to make a 40-year-old diva happy. I've talked to your wife. Yeah. That's good stuff. So I think it would be smart to move on.
The crazy thing, I mean, you know, I was fortunate enough to be with the Patriot organization for 4 years and won 2 Super Bowls. But the thing is, when you mention all those players out, Colin, you know, the Lewis's, the Solder, the Cooks, the Amendola, Edelman's out, and now you want to take Gronkowski. Look, the best two coaches in this league over the last 15 years are Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels, okay? good luck winning with that group if you don't have Gronk. Like, how are they going to do it? They'll find a way to move the football.
And what a Super Bowl without
They'll find a way to move, but not without everybody on the roster.
Exactly.
The entire roster's here. Like,
and by the way, Brady has even – this is something that I've heard.
You have to have someone to line up.
You have to have somebody. And the other thing – again, if Edelman was here, if Brandon Cooks was here, if Deion Lewis was here, man, did you notice what the Patriots did in the draft? They needed defense. They went offense. And they're a bunch of babies. Tom doesn't want to deal with 21-year-old kids. Like, Gronk is his safety blanket.
I don't take any stock in this, and Rob knows better than anybody because he worked there. Because when those moves came, no one saw them coming. They just happened because Belichick made them. Here's something that's out there now, whether it's a ploy, some type of – there's always a reason to the madness. Is it to get Gronk on in sync? I agree with you. They ain't going to do it because when that man does things, it's all calculated and it's no one sees it coming. This is seeing it coming. So I think I don't take any stock in it. And, Rob, you know better than I do because you work there. You know the man better than me.
I think your point where I agree with is maybe Belichick's trying to motivate – push Gronkowski, put some pressure on him. You want to skip OTAs. You want to act like you're the same as Tom Brady. You're not. You're on the trading block. You could be moved. But I'll go back to, if you can't motivate him, if you can't move, because Gronkowski is not Brady. He's not as reliable as Brady. Tom Brady, other than suspension and 1 year when he got injured, he's always available. Gronkowski's not. He's injury prone. And he takes big shots. You got to move. Guys don't get to play forever at that high of a level. Brady's done it,
sometimes,
but it ain't going to be Gronk.
Sometimes in sports, you make moves to take care of people. Michael Jordan had his friends.
Scottie Pippen.
Well, no. B.J. Armstrong. But, I mean, there are times, you know, Kobe like Derek Fisher. There are times that when you have an aging star and you're a championship-level team, you keep a coach.
Kobe had Shaq, too, and got dusted.
By the way, how many years did LeBron James have James Jones on the team?
Mike Miller,
Those were his guys. To North Carolina, where the Panthers' new owner, David Tepper, was introduced at a press conference today. Tepper, he bought the team when Jerry Richardson was forced to sell after allegations of sexual harassment. The team was fined $2 million after an NFL investigation. But today, Tepper revealed he is contractually obligated to keep the statue of Richardson standing outside the stadium. You okay with this, Jason?
I'm perfectly okay with it. One day soon, they'll build a statue of Kobe Bryant outside Staples Center. And Kobe Bryant survived some pretty serious allegations and had a civil settlement with a young woman in Colorado. And so I don't know any unflawed human beings anywhere. And I'm not trying to minimize the accusations against Jerry Richardson. But we got statues all over this country of people who were very, very flawed, as flawed as Jerry Richardson. And so I don't have a problem with it. You know, someone asked me before the show, well, do you think he earned it? And I'm like, no, he didn't earn it. He bought it. and that's America. This is a capitalistic society. He didn't earn nothing. He bought it. He who has the gold makes the rules. That's the golden rule.
Yeah, and I also think you're not going to have a $2 billion purchase derailed over a statue. Like, in the end, we have a guy who's very excited. to own the franchise, has been sort of waiting for several years for an opportunity, and now gets a pretty interesting franchise with a star quarterback, a loyal fan base, a really interesting division. It's not going to be derailed because of a statue issue, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I remember those statues before Richardson, I think, was up there. But I remember when we were playing them on a Thursday, and Sean's like, look, we're going to beat these guys, and then we're going to go around their stadium twice and see those stupid Panthers. So I guess now he's adding, you know, the ex-owner there too. So I don't know. It's strange though. But like you say, I love the comment there about, hey, you buy your own statue. So whatever it is, if it's there permanently, it's there permanently. But watch out for Sean circling it twice.
My problem is the NFL again, the PR. This man was charged with racism and sexual harassment, and they basically fined, not $2 million to all of us is a lot of money, but not to a billion who sold a sold his business for $1 billion.
$2 billion.
So that's chump change. And the NFL, again, has a chance to do a PR thing, to build the image back up. Hey, look what we're doing. We're going after, he was wrong, blah, blah, blah. Instead, they just try to sweep it on the rug and get him out of there and not make issue of, hey, this is not acceptable in our league. We need to make sure we're doing something good about it.
But isn't it worse? I mean, worse or not, isn't it more punitive forcing a man to sell a franchise? I mean, you make $150 million a year just on equity. It grows every year.
I don't know. With $2 billion, okay, I walk away in a heartbeat. But again, from an image standpoint, the NFL, we talked about it. The NFL is having an image standpoint, and here's a man that they can make an example of, like the NBA did with Sterling. And
who also got to sell his team for $2 billion.
And didn't want to.
but at least people, players, as well as coaches, all came out and talked about this and castrated Sterling for doing and how he handled it. You didn't hear that about Richardson, and I'm sorry. I just got to speak up for it because someone has to about it.
No, I get your point. The only thing I'll say is Jerry Richardson, I believe, would much rather today still be owning his team and not have that $2 billion check. And so it was punitive. This guy played in the NFL.
Yes,
he keeps the shield out there on his stadium. He's very proud
to
be associated with the NFL. He basically got kicked out of the most exclusive country club in the league. And
in America.
In the world, in America. Yeah. Yes. And so I think that's pretty punitive to him. Us on the outside, who've never been billionaires, we can sit up and go, well, you got a $2 billion check, and I would have done that. But in his world, he has been stained. However much time he's got left, he will carry that scarlet letter around. You got kicked out of the NFL. I think the guy has been punished. I think the NFL is in a position where there was nothing they could do to avoid a PR backlash because the NFL is just under attack. If the NFL came out today with a ruling that it's going to be 75 and sunny across America every day, people would say, what do you mean? Can't be 74?
And it's self-inflicting for the NFL. But you're right. And it's self-inflicting for the NFL, a lot of their own doing.
I agree with that. I think they make a lot of PR mistakes.
They have made a ton.
I mean, even just this NFLPA story, they don't have a relationship with the NFLPA that they can keep the anthem story quiet.
I know. I sound like such a homer for the league, but the league is under such attack. It doesn't matter what they do. That anything, if they cured cancer tomorrow, how are we going to control the population? I mean, my God, don't cure cancer. There's nothing the NFL can do to satisfy the American media that is out to destroy the NFL. And so I blame the NFLPA, and I blame the NFL for even entertaining, like, reopening the national anthem controversy. But I can't fault the NFL because DeMaurice Smith is a bad head of the NFLPA. I can't fault the NFL. They booted the man out of the most exclusive club that every billionaire man dreams about being in. They kicked him out, stained his image, ruined his image. That's not enough.
No, that's enough.
They you know, in Jerry Richardson's world, he's been punished pretty severely.
In his world, but not our world.
He doesn't live in our world.
But that's who we. But we do.
What do you want? Have the bones left of him?
Yes. When you deal with racism and sexual harassment,
this is the same.
I do.
The only team I ever got a chance to interview for as a head coach, turned that thing out because I was prepared like no other, And Marty Herney's like, he tells Jimmy Sexton, the agent, like, you know, I don't, his weight, his hair, his teeth, we can't put him in front of Jerry Richardson. So I would have a bone with him too, but you know what? I think enough's enough with this man. He did sign Ron Rivera.
Chico.
He did draft Cam Newton.
Yes, he did.
I mean, you know, so he's had flashes of.
He had a problem against fat people.
He did.
You want
blood now too?
You want blood now too?
I think it's wrong too.
Welcome back. Joined now by Fox NBA analyst Jim Jackson, founder of the Big Lead, Jason McIntyre. Let's move to LeBron. Officially signed with the Lakers yesterday. There's the pick. Reportedly somewhere in town now, handing out free pizzas from his chain, The Blaze. While adding LeBron was a no-brainer for the Lakers, some of the other signings like Lance Stephenson, JaVale McGee have left people a little confused, including Yahoo's Chris Mannix, who went off yesterday about how this could all go wrong.
It's so goofy. It really is. And I love the narrative. Some people actually are believing that, you know, we're getting away from what Miami did and what Cleveland did. We're not going to surround LeBron James with shooters. We're going to surround him with competitors and with playmakers. The Lakers are doing a hell of a job selling this narrative, that type of team that will take LeBron into through the final stage of his career. But I think it's total nonsense. I think this is the type of team that spontaneously combusts right around midseason.
You buy that, Whitlock?
1,000%.
Oh, Lord.
This team is built for one mission: get Luke Walton fired. It's going to blow up, and they're going to fire Luke Walton, and then they're going to get a coach in here that LeBron wants, and then they're going to build the real team around LeBron. This team has one mission: get the coach fired, create the chaos. It may happen by midseason.
Oh.
Everybody, all these guys that don't fit, can't shoot around LeBron on one-year deals.
Can I remind you of last year? Kyrie leaves LeBron. The replacement can't play. Kevin Love gets hurt for a month. The coach has, health issues. They make a total roster switch at midseason. They have several key injuries. J.R. Smith at one point throws soup at a coach on the staff, and they get to the finals. LeBron's lived in chaos for 10 years. He overcomes it every time. The West is not, after what Houston did, you know, losing their forwards, Golden State's great. Everybody's beatable after that. LeBron swims in chaos. He dines in chaos. He lives in chaos.
And fired coaches.
Come on.
Fired coaches.
You don't like Magic?
Yeah. No, I'm not. Yeah.
But here's my thing. They're not planning. This is a long-term strategy, long-term meaning the next 2 or 3 years. This team right here, a lot of one-year deals. They didn't want money to get tied up because some of the other free agents were looking for long-term deals, and the Lakers weren't going to tie that money up. So what you do is you put together a competitive team, you get this Lakers team back relevant again. And again, Colin, we were talking about this. In the West, Jason, you may agree or disagree, but think about the teams right there we're talking about competing. Houston just lost, I think, two of their key pieces, okay?
Right.
I don't really trust OKC yet. Portland is a team, I don't know where they're at. Denver, Utah may be the only one in regards to maybe taking that next step, but who is really a viable threat
the world's best basketball player.
Lakers are putting themselves in position, and you say, well, they could very easily be in the top five of the Western Conference at the end of the year based on what's going on all around the rest of the Western Conference. And I agree with them. Don't tie up your money this year. Big-time free agent class next year.
I don't see this spontaneously combusting thing happening. I keep coming back to this. All three of these guys were key contributors on playoff teams last year. JaVale McGee cleaned up his act in Golden State. Mm-hmm. Rondo, by the way, played Damian Lillard to a standstill in the first round, and they won. And Lance Stephenson, you know, came off the bench for the Pacers last year. But I just don't see it. And let's not forget, LeBron's here for 3 years. There was the chance of combusting in Cleveland last year because his deal was up. But now he's sticking around for 3 years. I don't see why you'd build a team to get a coach fired. It just doesn't really make sense.
Why do you think they want to get
none
him
of these
fired?
Guys can. Well, because Rob Pelinka and Magic Johnson didn't hire him. LeBron hasn't met with him.
Okay.
He's insignificant.
So why don't they just fire him?
Because they can't. Because Jenny Buss is committed to him right now. But at halfway through this season, after watching a group of guys that couldn't beat me, you, and Cowherd in a game of horse. They couldn't beat us in a game of horse. They can't shoot. They've surrounded LeBron with a bunch of guys that can't shoot. look, JaVale McGee's coming off his best behavior because they were in a championship run. They won't be in a championship run here. Lance Stevens is going to Lance Stevens wherever he's at. I've seen it. I'm a Pacer fan. Rajon Rondo is one of the more difficult players to play with in the league and coach in the league. He's a very smart guy, but he's difficult.
But they're all on one-year deals.
Right.
Act up, you're out the door.
That's a totally different deal.
That, to me, everybody on a one-year deal. Wasn't that Isaiah Thomas' situation where he was out trying to play for his next contract? So you got a bunch of guys playing for their next contract who can't shoot, who are surrounded by a guy that brings the biggest spotlight in the history of sports. It's not going to take much of a match. The gas is all sitting there. The fans are being flamed. Somebody's going to throw a match, probably LaVar Ball.
Well, I think that's probably the – outside of those three, I think that's the biggest, I think, conundrum right now is the LaVar Ball, Lonzo Ball situation, depending on what happens with Rondo at the beginning of the year. To me, I'm not – the other three, I think, are professional enough. And, again – Alvin Gentry is great. I thought what Rondo did in New Orleans was absolutely wonderful, despite his reputation and what went on. But we haven't even talked about that Lonzo issue because I do think it comes to a point where Rondo is going to be on the court and we're going to start to hear the backdrop of some murmuring from LeVar. How will the Lakers and LeBron, you got to include LeBron in this, handle that situation going in? That's going to be the key to me.
All right, to another team making questionable decisions, the Rockets, who have seen two major role players, Trevor Ariza and Luke Mbamute, leave in free agency and are now reportedly determined to sign Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah.
The Rockets just pushed Golden State to 7 games, but they look to be a pretty different team next year. Cowherd, are the Rockets still the number one threat to the Warriors?
I don't think so. I don't. I think they're desperate at forward. Listen, you cannot be deficient at forward in the West. You got a Durant now. You got a LeBron now. You got a Kawhi Leonard now. You just can't be weak there. And they are. And those were willful, long, athletic defenders at a reasonable price. But this is what happens. Chris Paul demands a max. Bye-bye, Trevor Ariza. And Clint Capella wants to be paid like a star, though he can't shoot in 2018. Bye-bye, Luke. This is what happens. Jason, we look at the Golden State dynasty, and what we've never given enough credit to is smarts. Kevin Durant last year, same time. I'll take less money to keep Andre Iguodala. Chris Paul this year, I want a max. You're never healthy. Golden State's dynasty has been formed off drafting smart. It's been off being smart.
Mm-hmm.
Last year at this time, Golden State had the same dilemma. Kevin Durant, second best player in the world, said, I'll take less. Chris Paul played 50 games this year. He wants a max. This is what happens. Their window closed.
Yeah, I don't think the Rockets are the number one threat. And I'm not even sure if there is a number one threat to the Golden
State Warriors. That's probably in the West, there may not be.
But, you know, right now, I'm Utah and OKC look like to me the best contenders, but it's certainly in the Houston Rockets.
Yeah.
Any team that's talking about signing Carmelo as a solution.
even if you sign Carmelo, you got to be upfront and honest with what his role is going to be. You got to do that from day one. If you want to come here, this is your role. 20, 25 minutes, whether that's coming off the bench, you're not going to get X amount of shots. You have to put the onus on Carmelo to make a decision. But I always thought this Houston team, to me, they weren't built for the long term. And what I mean by that, Boston is, Philly is, even Golden State, because they're still youthful in their prime positions. Houston, your best player, second best player, is Chris Paul at 33, been injured. Talking about coming back now for another year. James Harden's a little bit older. So this Houston team, now you lose Trevor Ariza, he was still older. So what was that run ultimately going to be for Houston if they didn't win it in this window of this year or next year? What was it going to be? I never liked that makeup in regards to long-term success for Houston, and I think we see it playing out. They're going to have to pay Clint Capella. Is he worth it?
No.
That's not the question. Is he going to get it? More than likely.
He's got some leverage.
Because he has leverage with the Rockets because they need to keep something intact in order to sell what they've been selling that they can be a viable threat to Golden State.
I would agree with you, Whitlock. Utah is a team on the rise, but also, Carmelo leaving OKC feels like addition by subtraction. You get him out of the locker room. You get the distraction of I want my shots out of there. But I believe, guys, the L.A. Lakers, second-best team in the West.
I think LeBron's
worth 15 wins. Remember, 35 wins last year plus 15 from LeBron, that's 50.
Mm-hmm.
Third-best team in the West last year won 49 games. You're telling me LeBron isn't worth 15 wins to the Lakers? I think they're right there, second in the West. Now, taking down Golden State, that's another challenge. But
My pushback against the Lakers as the threat would be, look, winning 35 games when no one cares, when other teams are rolling in there, oh, Lonzo and the kids, let's slap them around. When LeBron is there, you get everybody's A-plus game. And so winning 45 games with LeBron going to be much harder than winning 35 when Lonzo and Kuzma and Brandon Ingram, everybody's under 180
pounds. Well, Lonzo did miss 30 games last year. Yeah. Brandon Ingram missed 20. They had a bunch of one-year
You don't like
contract
any of these
guys.
Young Laker players. Kuzma scores 16 as a
How about
rookie.
Kuzma?
Kuzma is significantly better as a rookie than Kawhi and Paul George was. Significantly.
Hey, Brandon Ingram is about to take a big leap, guys.
Hold on.
I'm telling
Kawhi
you.
Kawhi and Paul George. And again, Kawhi and Paul George joined teams that were playing important games. The Lakers were playing it's like a totally different league. None of their games mattered. All of San Antonio's games have mattered for the last 20 years. Many of the Pacers games on Paul George's rise mattered. It's easy to put up numbers when everybody is giving you their 80% regular season effort and the important teams are getting your 95-100% effort. And so I like Kuzma, but I'm not sold on anybody, including Kuzma, until I see him play an important game.
That's fair.
All right, welcome back. Time for Last Call. Let's move to Johnny Manziel, who hasn't exactly been lighting up since launching his football comeback in the CFL with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Manziel is stuck on the bench behind Jeremiah Masoli, who is breaking CFL records right now. Cowherd, you think Johnny regrets going to Canada?
Yeah, I think to some degree there's some ego there. I think it's his only way back to the NFL. But who wants to sit on the bench when you've been the money sign? Johnny Manziel, first round NFL. I think it's painful.
See, I think that's different, though, than regret. I think he may be disappointed with what's going on. I don't think he should have any regret. I think in terms of earning respect from football people, going to Canada, sitting the bench, not being a headache, I think is working for him in terms of rehabilitating his image. I think he's disappointed he can't get on the field and show that he can still play. But if I were him, I would have no regrets about doing this. I think he made the right decision. And so far, it's paying some upside, not the big upside that he was looking for. All right, let's move to the World Cup, where England is getting ready for tomorrow's semifinal with Croatia by throwing around a rubber chicken. Cowherd, you keep telling everyone you're 61% English?
Yes.
You think your boys will pull this off?
Yes, tomorrow? I am part that's coming home. All right.
How do you know you're 61%?
Because I did that 23andMe thing.
You could be like 58%.
No, it's 61%.
61%.
And once you get over the 60, you are officially British.
You're
now, they have the younger team. They are the more rested team. Croatia went in an extra time against Russia. They have the best player in Harry Kane. And now, I don't think they'll beat France. I think France is the best team. But England is in the World Cup final.
Look for Sterling, Raheem Sterling. He's going to come out of nowhere and leave England tomorrow.
British, love us.